This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Two by two, they're all in line. Elio Castroneves, a track record, bringing him to the green flag. It's in the air, we're underway.
Great jump from Ryan Henare in that yellow car. Look for him to make a move here as Dixon leads him down to turn one.
Castroneves was completely asleep. He'd been swallowed up. Now P6, Kanaan comes to the outside of Castroneves to make a move as he tucks in on his teammate. Oh, that's tight right there. You're not going to go two abreast for very long.
Oh, no, Kimball!
Right away.
What did I tell you? And that is Charlie. That will put him out.
And that's two races in a row. Kimball went out on the first lap at St. Pete.
I could see that brewing immediately. I said, you're not going to go two abreast for very long. And Willpower looks like he might have a bent A-arm.
Marco Andretti now coming to a complete stop.
Yeah, on the track.
You know, now it's gone into like a limp mode, like it's like shut the ignition down.
We've seen electronic control issues all weekend with some of the Hondas. There's the yellow.
Something wrong with Alexander Rossi in the 98. He's slow on the track.
Looks like an oil fire on the right-hand side, probably drive line related.
Katie, what's going on with the 98?
Rick, he just came over the radio and said, guys, I'm plucked.
Ryan Henare.
Oh, no.
By just 1 second, and Ryan Henare has stopped on the track.
Another Honda.
Coming through the hairpin for the final time, James Hinchcliffe. Coming by the grandstand, Hinchcliffe's going to win in Long Beach.
Honestly, when you go back to May of 2015, you're laying in a hospital bed. Did you think this moment was ever going to happen again, James?
Absolutely. You know, I knew from day one I had the best support around me, my friends, my family, most importantly, this race team. Schmidt-Peterson Motorsport, you know, I said on the radio, my three, top three, Indy 500, Toronto, and in Long Beach. We've got pole at one, a podium at the other, and now the win at the third. So we got two more to go. So proud of these boys, proud of Honda, everybody. Just what a phenomenal result.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We're off to a roaring start.
It's good.
This is just the rehearsal, right?
That's right. We're here for live. You are looking live at Two Guys, Two Into Radio Show here at Fast Times Indoor Karting.
Are we really on the air?
Don't know. Don't care.
Not sure.
You and me.
This is we'll just tape the podcast and edit it out. This is why we don't do live much anymore. Thank you for joining us tonight. We'll work through technical issues as we go. We are at Fast Times Indoor Karting for the second annual Kevin Lee Grand Prix for a purpose. We are raising money for children's cancer research through the Caroline Sims Cancer Endowment at Riley Hospital, and the Kevin Lee Grand Prix honors Ben Burchin. We'll talk more about Ben and the cause as we get into it coming up in just a little while. And we'll talk with some of the guests that are here tonight and we'll do some go-kart racing here as well. And there's still room for you to join us. We still have an opportunity for you to come out until 9 o'clock. We'll be measuring fast times, and then we'll have the final round a little bit later on after that. And I think everyone's going to get a couple of chances, kind of a qualifying effort and then a fast time effort. And then the fastest will get to go again later tonight. $50 if you want to race, $25 if you just want to come and visit with us and partake of the free food and drink that comes along with it, courtesy of Sullivan Steakhouse, and the drink from Redemption Ale Works and Crown Liquors as well. So we thank everyone for their support of this. And also there's a silent auction going on for Man Cave Collectibles, and we thank Fast Signs for their involvement as well. Plus, Durrett and Puckin and Associates, Caliber Home Loans, Three River Sales, Don and Jennifer Caldwell for donating the shirts that everyone that's coming out tonight is going to get as well, and many others that have helped. Chip Ganassi Racing, John Forsh Racing, the Indiana Fever, Kalita Motorsports, and so many others a part of this program tonight. All right, let's get into the meat of the program and talk about what we saw over the weekend at Long Beach. All things considered, you know, I think this is an event we always somewhat grade on the curve. I think we can maybe take the curve out a little bit. I thought we had enough going on, enough drama, enough intrigue, that would say that was a pretty good event, pretty entertaining race.
I would start by saying this is a pretty good event. Everyone is eating or drinking or consuming the fun going on in the building. So off to a good start. Congrats to you for organizing this. But you're right. I think Jim McAlean puts on a good show year in, year out in Long Beach. This was no exception to that. And I thought the racing was really good as well. And so when you've got a good combination of crowd and on-track activity, you've got a pretty good show. And then, to cap it off, you had a race winner that suit of the moment, if you will.
Yep.
In Tinseltown became Hinchtown, as Jim Aiello wrote in the Indianapolis Star and USA Today. So good for Hinch, good for Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, and good for the Long Beach Grand Prix.
So from the things that made this one interesting, it helped that you had different strategies. That's the basic and easiest way to make sure things are shaken up a little bit. If everybody's on the same strategy, you run the risk of it being a little bit processional, but you get people trying two and three stops, then you're going to always have something to watch and keep an eye on.
So the beauty in this case is you had drivers committed to a two-stop race, as you said, and they were somewhat managing their speed in order to keep their track position, but yet not burn up their fuel. Then you had guys who decided, like Simon Pagenaud, I'm in the back. The best way for me to get to the front is to go as hard as I can and make this a three-stop race. And then, lo and behold, we had one in the middle. We had Scott Dixon's team, a little indecisive about where it should be. I mean, they started with a two-stop strategy. Marco Andretti's car slowed on the racetrack. It appeared there might be a reason for a caution. They come to pit road, in a sense, making it then a three-stop race. So then you were, okay, you got a fast car off a two-stop strategy, now on a three-stop strategy. That added another layer to it, and boy, Scott Dixon was honked off after that one. He didn't see the need to come to pit road, but they've been burned a couple times by staying out on the racetrack and then the caution coming out, and their two-stop cycle really kind of backfired. So this was a kind of a middling of the strategies, and it didn't work for him. Finished fourth, but still probably took away the chance to win the race.
And I understand why Dixon is frustrated, because this is the second race in a row where he probably should have won. He should have won St. Pete as well, got caught out from the caution from the exact opposite circumstance. All of that said, though, and there were multiple races last year where things did not break their way, I try to first guess. And when Marco was limping around, that was one of the things that I was thinking about, is I think we're going to see guys get screwed who haven't come into pit. So I totally understand why Mike Hull made that decision at that point. Think about it this way. Had they called a caution?
He's golden.
No, had they called a caution and he didn't
pit.
Oh,
and he didn't pit,
he would be just as upset.
Right.
Maybe he wouldn't have been, because they did have a clear plan that they were trying to make it in two stops, and maybe it still could have worked out, because it wasn't like they were two laps away from needing to pit. They still had another, with a caution, you know, they could have gone another 12 or 13 laps, so they might have still been okay. But here's the other thing to think about with Dixon. Even though it didn't work out, they came in and pitted, and it stayed green. Had they not had the two late cautions in the race, he might have won.
Sure.
Because all of those others got a huge break. They weren't saving as much. It was going to be really close whether they were going to make it or not. I had a fear coming in this race, and I know a lot of people did, that five laps wasn't going to be enough. They added five laps to try to make it so it wasn't an easy two-stopper, and we wondered, well, maybe they should have added 10. And I will say, I know some people I saw on the grid were saying, well, it's your fault, right? It's TV's fault.
They
didn't go
fault.
To 90. It wasn't TV. We had plenty of window. It wasn't really IndyCar. Keep in mind, there are a lot of different variables involved, and you're racing on city streets, so they have a hard out time of when they need to get the cleanup started and get things going again. So that was a fear, that it was, because they're getting better fuel mileage this year than last year by about a lap or so, that it might still be a very doable two-stop strategy. I think 85 might be about right, though, because everybody that I was talking before was saying, no, it's going to be really, if somehow it stays green, it is going to be incredibly tough to make it two. And I wish I could have seen what Will Power would have done, because he had me convinced, and his engineer, David Faustino, had me convinced that you really can't do it on two stops. You're going to be going so slow. And I think they were going to do three as well. And it turns out he took contact and was running in the back. But that's the best scenario. Like we saw with Charlie Kimball at Mid-Ohio a few years ago. He ran fast, did an extra stop, and won the race. Others that tried to save weren't going quick enough. And even at a place where it's hard to pass, you got passed.
Right. And we saw, I mean, Simon Pagenaud had a very fast car. I mean, he did, because He just, you know, he's one of the best drivers. They got one of the best combinations, so forth. He's a reigning series champion. But in this case, he started last because he had his two best qualifying laps taken away from him because of an incident with Elio Castroneves in the first qualifying session. But he was in the back, committed to a three-stop strategy, and he was coming. I mean, he was passing cars, maybe not as quickly as many of us expected, but he was passing cars quickly, and he would have really been a fun one to watch had we had a full green flag event. And we have had those before. In fact, we had a stretch of them at the start of last season where there wasn't a caution for a long period of time over a couple different races. So, you know, it's that's where the money is made, and sitting on top of those pit boxes making strategy decisions. It's not unlike NASCAR where we see guys, you know, wrenching over which strategy to play.
And it's still a guess.
It's just a guess.
It's an educated guess.
Yes, but it depends on the number of cautions, the length of those cautions, and that's why all the teams have history of how many cautions there have been in the course of that event over the years, how many cautions have come in the last 20 or 30 laps. You start factoring in all those variables. It's a tough thing to do to pick strategy, and some of the teams have gotten it right just because the way the cautions have fallen, the laps under green. So just kind of one of those things. But I think Dixon had the best car. This is certainly not, though, a cheap win, because Hinchcliffe, if he wasn't the best car, and I'd probably give that to Dixon, and second best might have been Pagano, but you could argue that Hinchcliffe was in the top three.
And Pagano needed a break, and I was covering their pit, and from talking to Kyle Moyer more extensively, talked to Simon quite a bit, but, you know, I said point blank, unless you get a caution to fall your way and cycle to the front, what's a best case scenario? Top five's a win, is what he said. Fifth would be a win. That's where they got. The only way you can really go from last to first is you're going to have to pit right before a caution and cycle up to the front. And no one really gained hugely. No one gained at all from any of the cautions.
Yeah, that's right. So it's, you know, tough thing to do to come from the back. But he had a fast car. And as I said, Hinchcliffe's victory very well deserved. When one of the three best cars wins in this series, then you have to consider the success, the event a success from the standpoint of it awarded the right guy the trip to victory lane.
And for Hinchcliffe, he's off to a fantastic start this season. Some people had said that with some better luck, he could have won St. Pete. It sounds like from everything I heard, though, that his car in the second half of that race may not have been a winning car, but he certainly would have had a better result than what he ultimately had at St. Pete. Where did he finish in the first race of the year? I think he finished like 9th or 10th or something.
Yeah, it wasn't 10th.
Like he finished 9th. He
Ed
finished
Jones
9th at St. Pete. So maybe he could have been like a 4th or a 5th place finisher in that race. But the point being, they're hooked up because he qualified well in the Fast 6 in both of those races. And it's a fantastic story. It's just, it's if you're writing things down, what works best if you're not rooting for anyone for IndyCar, that's one of the things that you want to see.
One of the things that's interesting, I thought about this, I asked him about it during the press conference, was how many wins. He's had 5 now, which I'll get off on a tangent here in a minute about.
This is worth mentioning.
5 wins gets him tied with virtually every other Canadian that's driven, except for Paul Tracy. He ties.
That's going to take a little while.
It's going to take a while. You know the list of good drivers, including Greg Moore. But
Carpentier win 5?
Tagliani.
Yeah. Tagliani's not 1-5, but he's one of the.
Villeneuve.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good list. Obviously, Paul Tracy's won a few more than that.
31.
But the point is, what I started to say was, he's won all these races, 4 of his 5 races, before the Indy 500. And then he's not done as well in the summertime. He did win Iowa, but he won St. Pete early. He won Brazil early. He wins this one early. And the other one was New Orleans, which came before.
And he had a good excuse for that with not winning again. Yeah, that was in 15. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So he wins a lot early. Wins if he's going to win, it's tended to come early. But you're right. He's off to a good start. He's had a couple years in the past where it was a slow start to the season. And this gets him off on much better footing. And you know, something I pointed out at the end of last year, and I continue to believe it's a factor with athletes. It's not a coincidence, I believe, but he's working on the last year of his contract,
yeah.
And that tends to I wouldn't think, you know, Hinchcliffe, I'd take his chances of winning, you know, in other years, but I always think there's something to that. When a guy's in a contract year, success tends to follow him.
It definitely can play into things in sports with guaranteed contracts. I think in racing it's probably more of a coincidence.
It probably
none
is.
None of them ever feel like a contract is guaranteed because they all know it doesn't matter how many years I have in the contract. If we lose our sponsor, then
right.
They're probably going to park the car and I'm not going to get to do anything. So, but it is an enviable position to be in. If you have a good year in a contract year, then you're going to have options moving forward, and that is potentially James Hinchcliffe. And if he can back it up on the track like he has been doing, going with the other assets that he brings to a program, it's a story for another time, but he will be someone in big demand at the end of this season. Some other stories to get to we'll do next, including what could have been a remarkable day for Andretti Autosport turning into just misery. We'll get into that and more from the Kevin Lee Grand Prix at Fast Times Indoor Karting on the north side. Stay with us. It's Trackside, 107.5, 1070, The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
We're at Fast Times Indoor Karting on the north side of Indianapolis tonight, raising money for children's cancer research with the Kevin Lee Grand Prix, honoring Ben Burchard. A lot of people from the racing community are here. Chris Denary, the television voice of the Pacers, is here. My co-worker from NBCSN, Katie Hargett, is here. And we have several Indy Lights drivers we'll chat with throughout the evening that are joining us now from Andretti Autosport, Nico Jamin, and also Juan Piedrahita from Team Pelfrey. Guys, how are your karting skills? How often do you come out here? Nico, start with you.
I've never been here, actually, so it's going to be my first time here. I've been to another indoor track in Indy. I love go-karting. I've done only 1 year in my career, so I'm not very experienced in go-kart, but I think I have the lightweight kind of thing, so you know, it could help me tonight.
Yeah, I like your chances, although you'll be surprised, especially if you don't come out here. It's fun for the people that come out here a lot. That is a real home track advantage, and they can beat the pros. They'll be faster than the people that are pros that don't come out all the time. Now, Juan, I know I've seen you out here before.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite indoor racetracks. It's pretty fast, and as you say, the first time I came here, I was surprised by some of the guys. They were really hard to beat, and it was a good time, so I always look forward for this event.
Now, Nico, you only karted for 1 year?
Yeah, I started racing go-kart when I was 15 only. I was playing tennis for a while before that, so starting when I was 15 and then raced cars in Europe for 2 years, and 4 years ago I came to the USA.
How have you enjoyed the transition?
I've loved it. I mean, the transition from go-kart to cars were pretty big. You know, it's a whole different driving style, so I had to learn how to drive a car. So I did that for 2 years in Europe, and coming to the USA was a great choice for me with the Road to Indy. And I'm very fortunate after 3 years in America to be racing in Indy Lights 500 now.
More so than the driving, what about living in America? What's that transition like?
Different food. Different food. No, you know, I love America. I think people are very welcoming and always willing. You know, I've had a lot of people helping me in the transition. I just moved in a month ago here in Carmel, just to be close to the team, and I really enjoy it.
It's working pretty well for Frenchmen lately, so you're from the right place, though, with Sebastian Bourdais and the way Simon Pagenaud are rolling.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know, it has helped me a little bit before the French, because, you know, the French driver have a really pretty good reputation now in IndyCar, and I'm really looking forward to race against those two in a few years in IndyCar.
Are they helpful to you? Do you spend any time with them at all?
I do, yeah. I do spend time, especially with Simon more than Seb, but I always have chat with them, and if I need advice, I usually ask Simon, and he's always willing to help me, so that's very nice.
That's Nico Jammini. He's a rookie in Indy Lights with Andretti Autosport. He won a couple of races, finished third in the championship last year in Pro Mazda. And Juan Piedrahita, we're talking about the Frenchman doing well. Your native land, Colombia, has had pretty good success in IndyCar as well. But you've been here a long time.
Yeah, this is a third and a half year in Indy Lights, because last year we didn't finish the season, but I love being here. I really enjoy it. I like just the whole thing. Being in Indy, it's awesome. And as you said, you know, IndyCar has had a lot of good Colombian drivers like Montoya and, you know, Munoz, Gavi. All those guys are really good.
How big was Montoya when you were a kid back home? He was not racing at home, but kind of impact did he have?
He was a legend. He was like, I remember waking up every day just to watch him, because he was spectacular. When he was in F1 and even Champ Car, he was unstoppable, basically. And, you know, he's the reason why there's so many Colombian drivers right now.
You're about the same age as Carlos Munoz. Did you guys ever run karts or any junior formulas together?
We started, I think, at the same time. I started when I was 6 years old, and I think he did too. But he was like a year in like, he was always, like, when he was in junior, I was in cadet. Cadet, so we were, I always seen him, but we actually never raced together in go-karts at least.
So you're with Team Pelfrey now for the, is this your first year with them? It's the second year with
second
them.
Year, yeah.
And it's a second year for their program in Indy Lights, and this has turned out to be one of the really good, strong teams. What kind of opportunity do you have this year?
I mean, they are a really strong team. I mean, they have really good engineering. My engineer, Yves, is a French guy, and he's amazing. He's worked with IndyCar.
French guys. They're
yeah,
good.
French
they
guys. Those French guys. They know what they do. And, I mean, they started really well. The car is super fast. We were top three all weekend. I just made two mistakes both races. But I think we're going to be all right. I think we went to Barber yesterday, and we were right up there. So I'm pretty confident we're going to turn around.
Yeah, you were quick at St. Pete.
Yeah.
And you had some real quick moments. You were really quick at Indianapolis on the road course last year, right?
Yeah. I think we're going to have a solid year. I mean, we were really good at the Freedom, too. So I'm really looking forward for that race and just sealing the deal this year.
Can you tell people like Nico that haven't done that what that race is like?
Oh, man, it's like, it's the best thing ever. It's, I can't even describe it. It's like, I don't know, it's amazing. You have to live it, too. It's so fast, so it's amazing. It's the best thing ever.
Was there an intimidation factor the first time out?
I'll tell you what. When you go out there and you see the green flag and you go and then you get to turn one and there's people on the stands, I don't know why, but it changes the whole perspective. So it becomes like a tunnel and you're going really fast because it's like a bubble. And if you, let's say you start like mid-pack, you're getting there like really fast. And it was like, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow, okay.
That's what all the IndyCar guys always say, that it looks like it's skinnier when there are people there.
Yeah, I don't know why.
And you weren't even there for the 300,000.
Exactly.
You're there for 100,000.
Exactly. And it was like, wow, I don't know why, but the perspective changes, and it's unbelievable.
What's each of you, what's been your favorite place to race so far in America?
I think for me, definitely Mid-Ohio. I've had a lot of success there. I mean, I've won my last five races in Mid-Ohio, three in USF, and I swept again last year.
You've won your last five.
Yeah,
that might be your favorite.
Yeah, so I really love that track. And then obviously, you know, Indianapolis. I mean, the whole atmosphere is incredible. But I think I'm mostly looking forward to go back in Ohio.
Yeah, I think so. Juan?
I like Toronto a lot. I like it. Super bumpy, super challenging, and the atmosphere of the whole weekend is pretty nice. There's a lot of people, even from Friday, and they really like it. So, and obviously Indy, it's those two are my favorites.
Those are a combination of tracks you don't normally hear first out of their mouth. People like Mid-Ohio for a lot of reasons, but I'm surprised that both of them came up with different tracks.
Well, it makes a lot of sense.
If
I've won five in a row, I'm going to say that. And Toronto is, you know, one of the best events.
Yeah.
Long
Beach. Atmosphere is amazing.
You were at Long Beach this weekend, weren't you?
I was there, to support the whole IndyCar team.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all very fast and didn't end up quite as well. I mean, they had some mechanical issues, but, pretty much all four drivers at Andretti could challenge for the win. So it was a little bit unfortunate, but I'm sure they're going to bounce back soon.
You're only 21, but what do you make of your young teammate, who was 16 when he won a race, Colton Herta, now is an old man at 17.
That's incredible for him. You know, I tell you what, the kid is quick, really quick. It looks like he doesn't really have any fear. You know, he's just out there having fun, and and going fast, and it works out very well for him. We'll see if he's consistent throughout the whole season, and if he can, you know, manage the pressure and everything and have a little bit more experience than him. But I'm sure he's going to do very well. And, you know, it's really good to have a quick teammate like this to share data and share setups. And it helps us, you know, really pushing us to the top, because every time one guy goes out there and he goes quicker than the other one, well, guess what? The next section, the other one will want to go quicker. And so we really push each other, and then that's a really good combination.
Some were testing at Barber, what, today?
Yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yesterday, yeah.
You were there?
Yeah, we were there.
You were there? And
yeah,
you said that went well.
That went really well for us, yeah.
And that's the next race coming up in a week and a half.
Yeah.
Indy Lights will be there as well. We'll have the telecast on NBCSN. I don't know what time yet. I'll find out. I think that's one of those that airs later that day, but we'll get that on next week's show. So,
by the way, I'm watching the indoor karting because we're at Fast Times Indoor Karting tonight, and, you know, speed is just, like, relative. I mean, you look at these guys coming around the corner, I'm like, holy cow, they're fast. So it doesn't really matter what car you're in, what circuit, anything can look fast and feel fast if you're quick, and that looks pretty quick.
Yeah, actually, for me, I don't know for Nico, but when I get in a go-kart, and especially in a narrow place like this, it feels almost like even faster than the real car, you know, like than the Indy Lights, just because you're so close to the ground and it's so narrow, as you said, so it's pretty cool.
And there are no long straightaways.
And there's no long straightaways. You're always working.
8 minutes, even if you're in good shape, is a little bit of a workout.
Exactly.
Yep. All right, we're going to see what you guys have here in a little bit. Thanks so much for coming out.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Nico Jamin, Juan Piedrahita, Indy Lights drivers, joining us here tonight at Fast Times. We'll talk to some of the other guys that are here as we continue. And we talked about Andretti Autosport. We'll get back to Long Beach and their woes from this past weekend. And plenty more to come. We'll sneak in some tweets at KevinLee23. Stay with us. This is 107.5 1070 The Fan.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for joining us tonight at Fast Times Indoor Karting for the Kevin Lee Grand Prix, honoring Ben Burchard, raising money for the Caroline Sims Cancer Endowment at Riley Children's Hospital. Great turnout tonight. You can still join us. We'll be here until at least 10 o'clock. The program continues until 9. I'm Kevin Lee, along with Kurt Cavan. A very special guest is joining us now. And I'm going to let you take over for a little bit, Kurt. I'm going to go work the room, as they say, and maybe even jump in the cart if I'm so needed.
Maybe raise a little money while you're out there.
I'll try.
Get into your pocketbook.
I gotcha.
All right. Chris Tenere joins us, the television voice of the Indiana Pacers, but really relevant to this conversation, the Turn 4 broadcaster on the radio network. You've been at that a long time.
Boy, since I've been a part of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway radio network since the late 90s, and I've been in Turn 4, I guess it's been about 16, 17 years now. I took over for Bob Lamy. He retired in the early 2000s. I was in the pits. And Chico was running. He was the general manager. Chico Fernandez was the GM of the IMS radio network. And he said, hey, we'd like to put you out in Turn 4. And I'm like, wow. And I remember when John Royer, the late John Royer, drove me out in a golf cart. And I went up and they showed me where I was going to sit. And I'm not a big fan of heights. And I said, that's where I'm going to be. And it's really cool, Kurt, to be up there every May and be a part of it, and looking forward to 2017.
So let's give some perspective, and I've been up there. So you walk to the top of the grandstand, which is
right,
like RR, row RR,
yeah,
whatever it is, and you get to a little ladder.
Yes.
A ladder that doesn't have really a front or a back. It's kind of one of those open ladders.
Well, this is a little bit different. I mean, let's see. I'm really on where I am is on the outside of the track in a basket.
Physically behind the grandstand.
Correct.
Essentially.
Yes, exactly. And so
above it but behind it.
Above it but behind it, that if you look down, you can Georgetown Road is behind you, and if you look down there's people walking. So I have to be very careful that I don't drop water bottles or my iPad or my phone, because it's going to plunk somebody on the head. But you are literally hanging in a basket And every year I look to make sure, and they do a great job, to make sure those bolts are secure. But it's a really neat location. You know, I've got a spotter up there. I've had a couple of other people up there. You can probably fit, you know, four or five people up there if you want. And what's cool about it is the same people are below me every year. And I've gotten to know all the people that are there. You know, they're trying to pass food and drink and all those kinds of things. And you just build a camaraderie with them. And so as much as it's cool calling the race, it's neat seeing all those the same people that are there every year.
Yeah, Chris Denary joins us. Of course, if you're in Indianapolis, you know the voice without introduction. But for the podcast purpose, I'll introduce you again. But there's no bathroom up there, is there?
No bathroom, but
No television.
I mean, what IMS has done, though, with the big boards has been great. It really helps us.
Yeah, but it has helped you.
It really helps us. And you know, the key, Kurt, is in this instance, as a broadcaster, is being a good listener, is to know now what Jerry Baker's saying in one, what Nick Yeoman is saying in two, Jake Query in three, and then it comes to me in the short shoot. So you have to pay a lot of attention because you can't see what's happening with, you know, most of the racetrack, though you do have the big boards now that you can look at. But you have to pay attention to the guys in front of you, especially coming out of the long backstretch and into turn three, because there are a lot of passes made there into the short shoot. So I've got to be on my toes knowing that whoever was leading coming out of three might not be the leader coming into four.
And, of course, you had the privilege, and it was a privilege for you to call it, but not really a privilege for J.R. Hildebrand.
I know what you're, yeah.
Not so much the privilege for the turn four impact.
Yeah.
You have to just react. It's,
right.
It's even more so maybe, well, I don't know if is it different than a basketball game, which you have built the moment over a couple hours.
Well, it's different for me, Kurt, because I do a couple of races a year, really three now. I do the 500, I do the Brickyard 400, and I do the Xfinity race. So I do three races a year. So I don't have, even though I have all these years of experience, you've still got to get in the moment. I still go out there during May, during practice, during qualifying, during carb day, and we'll do some rehearsals. We'll do some fake, you know, races, if you will, because you know how many people are listening to you, especially on lap 200 coming out of turn four. So, but I think all the years that I've been a play-by-play broadcaster, whether it's basketball or football or baseball, is it sets the table for you so that you're able to see and then communicate what you see. And I think that was key. I mean, you know, I look back and I hear that highlight of the J.R. Hildebrand. I feel horrible for him, but I'm always proud of myself that I was able to, in the moment, get the call right and accurate. And that's what our charge is as a part of the IMS radio network.
So Alexander Rossi crosses the finish, the start finish line on lap one to begin the final lap, and you know that if he makes it around, he's the race winner. Have
right.
you had a chance, or do you spend a couple minutes as they're going down the backstretch? What am I going to say if he gets back to me in the lead?
Yeah, it's one of those. I mean, I don't think I've never been one, whether I'm doing a basketball game or whatever, to have anything scripted. I just would rather be in the moment, and I go back to a number of years ago when it was Marco and Sam Hornish coming out of the short shoot. And I think I could see Hornish was coming. I mean, he was going to make it interesting. And I think my line in setting the table was, can a teenager win in Indianapolis? I wasn't going to say, you know, definitely Marco Andretti was going to win. But I just wanted to set the table because it's in turn four, you have to get in and out very quick, especially on that last lap, because you owe it to the voice of the 500. You know, whether it was Mike King, it's now Mark Janes, that's their call. And I want to be very respectful of their call. So I have to make sure whatever I'm going to say, I need to say it quickly and then get it to the voice of the 500.
You actually don't spend a lot of time with the drivers. That's one of the differences
right.
between your job in the 9-to-5, or really not a 9-to-5, but during the course of an NBA season, you know the players,
yeah.
you know their tendencies. You don't really have that luxury, and the
right.
car doesn't necessarily show you on the racetrack.
Right.
Is that interesting that maybe you don't know J.R. Hildebrand as well off the track,
right,
as you would a pacer.
Yeah, and I think the biggest difference with that, Kurt, is we have so many people involved in the race coverage, from the pit reporters to, of course, Mark and Davey Hamilton. My role is just to describe the action. I don't need to try to be something that I'm not. The difference is, as the TV voice of the Indiana Pacers, I'm that link 82 times a year. I'm the link at practice. I'm the link at shoot-around. I know these guys inside and out, but it's myself and Quinn Buckner and Jeremiah Johnson. So on the 500, I know my role, and my role is to describe what I see and let all the others that do it on a regular basis make sure that they can tell you the ins and outs about each driver.
Well, you've done a terrific job, and you're respectful of the event. I think, I don't know if people know this, but you grew up in Westfield, right?
Yeah.
Here in the community, and you know what the 500 means in this community and abroad even. So that's something that you bring really a local perspective to a very international event, and it's... I know. Like me, you're honored every chance you get to be a part of it.
Absolutely. It was really neat for me last week. Mark Miles and Allison Melancton were at Pacers practice. And as they count down each day to the 500, they present a bottle of milk. And they came to Pacers practice, and they brought a bottle of milk. And it was really cool to see the players' response and how they're great guys, how respectful they were, and knowing the impact of what the month of May means to Indianapolis. I've always said, if you can have the month of May with racers and throw a little Pacers in, it's an even more special month. But it was really cool to see that interaction between Mark and Allison and that bottle of milk and the Indiana Pacers. So I can't wait. I mean, it's not that far away, and I'll be sitting up there in turn four for the 100 first running of the 500.
Just like old times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chris, good to see you. We'll be listening for your call and a little playoff action here pretty soon.
Absolutely. We hope so. Get it done.
No one man should have all that power. Stop tripping. I'm tripping off the power.
This is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Kevin Lee Grand Prix. I'm Kurt Cavan, along with Kevin Lee, who is busy talking at another outlet, meaning the public address system here at Fast Times Indoor Karting on the north side. We're having a good time tonight, racing carts, raising money, eating food, not necessarily in that order, having a beverage or two. I'm having Sprite for the record, and we've had a lot of guests. Chris Denary just joined us from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. We are joined now by Dalton Kellett, who is part of the Mazda Road to Indy program and Andretti Autosport. He's got his Andretti uniform on, if you will, the traditional black polo shirt and logo. Dalton, good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kurt.
So let's start first, I guess, with this go-kart facility. Have you been here? Because the team based here. You've been in this town for some time, correct?
Yeah, it'll be 2 years in May. I'm from Toronto originally, and I've been to Fast Times probably four or five times. I was at the Kevin Lee Grand Prix last year.
That's right. So you have raced here. What's your skill set? Is this one of your good tracks? Because there's good tracks, and then there's tougher tracks.
Yeah, this is definitely a fun track. The two-level aspect of it, having you drive underneath the track, that's definitely unique. Very high grip. You can actually feel the rear inside tire picking up on the go-karts, which is something you normally only get on an actual race kart. So it's pretty cool.
So this is your second year in lights, correct? Both with Andretti?
Yep, second year coming back. Really excited. We had a great off-season, lots of testing, and things are going well so far.
Tell us about the dynamics at Andretti, because you've got teams in all different categories. You've got, obviously, four cars in the Verizon IndyCar Series, a lot of emphasis on May. With the 500, how do all that interaction work from a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it's a very unique situation. You know, you have a lot of teams that will say have an Indy car or an Indy Lights team, but they also have the Global Rallycross team with Volkswagen. So it's a great package. I think they're and Formula E also. I think their diversity just speaks to the quality of the management they have there, and just to keep that operation running. And it's really good from a development driver standpoint, because as an Indy Lights driver, I have access to the IndyCar guys, and if they're I can ask them for advice about tracks, about what say you know, if it's your first time going to Speedway, what's it like going in to one flat out? You can ask guys who have won, like Ryan Hunter Ray. So, you know, it's a great place to be.
So do you see those guys much? Marco's not based in Indianapolis. Ryan Hunter Ray is not based in Indianapolis. Carlos is, well, he's out now, but he wasn't based here. What's the, you know, how often do you see him?
Yeah, like outside of the track, you don't really interact too much. But when you're at the racetrack, you usually get the you get the chance to go on the engineering time stand during the race, and not only listen to the drivers, but you can hear all the engineers talking and watch the strategy evolve. So that's really good. And then you know you get to see Ryan and Marco and Takuma and those guys at the race events.
How was Michael Andretti, first time he was such a dominant driver in the Toronto race over the years? I assume you had a chance to see him at some point. You knew what a big star he was in IndyCar racing. How was that dynamic initially, and now how is your relationship with him now?
You know, I think definitely because I started in Pro Mazda with those guys, so coming in as a fairly green driver, you know, you're racing for Andretti. You know, I was a little nervous for sure. You know, this famous name in the pantheon of racing, Andretti, right? So it was just kind of honored. And as I've gotten to know the team and gotten to know Michael, you know, you realize that he's a very nice guy. He's really good to all his drivers. He's always there to help us out if you have any questions. He's very informative. Great, like you said, you know, he's done very well at Toronto and other tracks. A great source of information.
Kevin. I'm jumping into the conversation late. Have you guys talked about the Freedom 100?
No, we've not.
Last
Jump
year?
In there. Yeah,
you were one of those that was in that wild mix towards the end. You ended up finishing third, right?
Yep, third.
Last year. What was that final lap or two like? There was a restart late, and there were anyone about six guys that could still won that race, and you were one of them.
Yeah, it was really exciting. You know, it was my first race at IMS, so the whole time I was, you know, just heart pounding. But it was great. It was. I was a little worried because Shelby got me off the last restart. I think we went green with two to go, and he got me into one. And then on the last lap, I just dive bomb of all dive bombs into turn three and got the pass. So very exciting. Sad that I wasn't there with Dean and Ed for the win, but you know, it was still a great race.
You know, when you look at Indy Lights last year and this year as well, I think we might be in the glory days of Indy Lights. So, you know, if someone like yourself that's coming back for a second year, the natural thought would be, well, I'm going to move way up the standings. This is really my chance, and certainly that is still a possibility. But, you know, we look at this field and we see 10, 12 guys that are really, really good, and you're in that group as well. How do you measure your progress, and how do you keep your optimism when it's far from simple? It takes a lot of luck, and it's going to take a lot of things going anyone's way to finish in the top two or three of this championship and gather the attention that you want to move to IndyCar.
Yeah, it's tough, and I think that, like you said, the keeping the confidence going, that was a big thing last year. It was my first year in the car, in lights, and there were a lot of times where just it was so competitive, and you see yourself, around 10th outside of the top 10, you're like, oh no, I'm like so far back. But it's so competitive, like any of the top 15, they're all good drivers, so you just have to realize that, you know, you put your work in from karting to USF to Pro Mazda, you know, through the road to Indy, and you have the skill set and the talent. You just have to get over the mental side of it and put it down. And I think coming back for a second year, that's, you know, we're starting to I'm starting to hit my stride, kind of thing. Qualifying third for the second race at St. Pete, that was, you know, that was a good confidence booster. So really looking forward to Barber.
What did you notice from year one to year two? What gets easier?
Hasn't gotten easier. I think the competition's probably actually stiffer this year than it was last year.
Yeah, I guess I would say more from the car, because you're right. Yeah. Competition, it's not ever going to get easier.
No,
and from measuring yourself against yourself is where you can start.
Yeah, a big thing, you know, coming back for the second year, you know the car at the tracks. I think that was a big thing. You know, this is the first high horsepower, high downforce car that I've raced. So coming back and not having that, I have to learn this car at that track aspect of it has been a great help. Started working with Darren Manning as a driver coach last season, and still working with him again this year. So, you know, he's been a great help for me. I think that, you know, it's just all the work we've done with the team and in the off season, lots of testing, lot of simulator work, and that's really helped us. Just, you know, we know our setups, we know what the car's going to do, so now we're just getting to the tracks and applying that knowledge that we've gathered over the offseason.
Andretti Autosport Indy Lights driver Dalton Keld is joining us. You got a degree. Did you graduate last summer?
I graduated in June of 2015.
2 years ago in physics, engineering physics?
Engineering physics, yeah.
Which is well beyond my grasp. What do you want to do with that? Is it in a racing? Does it help you in the race car? Is this a backup plan? Not many guys have a degree.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of both. You know, it was never a thing where my parents forced me to get a degree. It was something that I wanted to do for myself. And I think, you know, my thought process was that, okay, even if you have a successful career in racing, I still want to have a career after that.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been passionate about science and technology, and it just made sense for me to get an engineering degree. I think I would like to apply it to maybe a position as a race engineer after I retire from driving, but we'll have to see what happens. And in terms of what it does for me as a driver, you know, especially as you get to the more complicated cars like the IndyCar, you're working with engineers all the time. So
yeah,
if you have that technical knowledge, then they can relate to you on a more, you know, they don't have to dumb things down, so to speak. You can talk on engineering terms, which I think helps for the communication process.
And there's a driver that's made that transition. Peter mm-hmm. Dempsey won the Freedom 100 a few years ago, and he's with Juncos's Indy Lights team, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a driver. I mean, he was close. He was one of those guys that probably was good enough, just didn't have the funding to break through, but he was one of those we would always talk about might get an opportunity in IndyCar, and being an engineer can be a pretty good job. That's a nice backup plan. Well, I'm really glad you came out tonight. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you in a week and a half in Barber.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kevin.
Dalton Keller drives the number 28 car for Andretti Autosport. Look for him with the K-Line Insulators USA sponsorship, and we'll have more to come from Fast Times Indoor Karting with Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. We're here raising money for children's cancer research tonight with the Kevin Lee Grand Prix on 107.5 at 1070 The Fan.
This is Elio Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Hour number two of the big show on the road tonight for the Kevin Lee Grand Prix, honoring Ben Burchard. And we are at Fast Times Indoor Karting, raising money for children's cancer research through the Caroline Sims Cancer Endowment at Riley Children's Hospital. We thank you for joining us. You can still come out if you're on the north side of Indianapolis, 96 and Keystone area next to Woodland Bowl. It's, a little bit east of 96 and south of Keystone. So come by and join us. And also, even if you're not here, you can participate. One of the things that is up for auction here tonight is an Indianapolis Motor Speedway May experience. We're going to be auctioning off some gear that Kurt will provide us, an IndyCar swag bag. I'll make sure we get an NBC hat and a shirt thrown in there as well. You can visit us in studio for a live edition of Trackside, and also four pit and paddock passes for an Indianapolis 500 practice day. And you're welcome to have me take you around if you like for a garage tour, and we'll wander around and you can ask any questions that you might have, and you never know who we might see, and we'll stop and pester some people along the way. So we'll start that at $100 tonight, and you can just call 317-239-1070 and tell David Deering back in our studio your name and a phone number and your bid, and then we're also taking bids here, and we'll kind of compare it. So, you know, admittedly, you're at a bit of a disadvantage at home. So what I would say is bid like $2,000, and then I guarantee you get it. Yeah? $2,000, and I think your chances are really good to be able to do that. But we'll do that until 9 o'clock tonight. So inclined to do that as well. And if you're really up there bidding with people, you know, I suppose after 9, if it continues, we can give you the phone number here, and you can jump on board that way. But we'll figure that out as we go. My co-host has abandoned me. So if we see Kyle Kaiser anywhere, we'll bring Kyle over and chat with him coming up in just a moment. Meanwhile, I will sneak to the Twitter box and see what we have there, and a quick refresh with a lot of pictures and things as well. A lot of people happy to hear from some of the guests we've had, and we're happy to give them an opportunity to promote the things that they're doing as well. This one came in from Brandon Carter. Says, absolutely love IndyCar pairing with Pirelli World Challenge and IMSA on road and street courses. Could you ever see this happening at the Indy Grand Prix? I think it's possible, but I don't know how likely it is. I think IMSA has now decided they prefer to be the headliner most of the time, with the exception of something like Long Beach, where that's a place they need to be, and they're not going to be the headliner. But otherwise, IMSA's philosophy over the last couple of years, since they restructured somewhat and since they came together with ALMS with the WeatherTech series, is that they want to be the headliner. So that may not be possible. And I think the other problem was some track time. That's something we wondered about, pairing it with the Grand Prix in May. But when you're doing the three levels, the Mazda Road to Indy and the IndyCar Series, I think there was a feeling that, no, this is an IndyCar event.
Right.
So if you're going to do IMSA, do it right and bring them back a different time if you can ever get the parties together and make it work financially.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said. I didn't hear the first part of your explanation, but I think largely what it's saying is this needs to be a month of May IndyCar, Indy 500, yeah, Indianapolis Motor Speedway event. There is probably a time and a place for an IMSA event, but this probably isn't the best time or location. If, for example, the Grand Prix was at another time during the year, like maybe it was in August or September or any other time for that, I'm just theoretically.
If you weren't really focused on this and the Indianapolis 500.
Correct.
Yeah.
Then I could see the IMSA race being a part of a really good weekend. But the way I see this structured is that it's a month of May, all signs, everything points to the Indianapolis 500, and that includes the Mazda Road to Indy.
I enjoyed it with NASCAR, but it didn't draw very well, and plus they had to run on Friday evening, so that's a difficult time slot for them, so I understand why that didn't work for them either.
Yeah, I did too, and IMSA would love to come back with a endurance race of some length. There had been talk, maybe it's the exact number of hours and minutes that it took to run,
yeah,
the first Indianapolis 500. What was that, 6 hours and 41 minutes or whatever it turned out to be?
Yeah, I think 6:42 for some
something
reason
like that
sticks in my mind.
So there was some talk years ago that would be a really good opportunity, but so far that hasn't materialized.
Skip and SC, Skip Free, and also Matty Brabham is here. So,
oh, good.
We'll maybe check in with him a little bit and see how his. I think he might have won in Super Trucks again this past weekend. He's been doing really well and still open to an Indy 500 opportunity. Skip asks, how much series coverage is there on SiriusXM other than race day? Any possibility of them picking up trackside? Well, let's ask the Vice President of Communications with IndyCar.
Well, Sirius has got, SiriusXM has got, they've got races, they've got, they play old races, they play, the Indianapolis 500 and the IndyCar races. They're looking for more content. Now, there has to be a way to fit it into their overall schedule, but that can be done. It's just a matter of, working out some details. I mean, these things are never as easy as they seem and as simple as they seem. So it's one of the things on the radar. But, I don't want to push our agenda in my new job, but we do need to get them some more content. By the way, the Mayor on Air podcast is on there as well. It airs on SiriusXM.
I think they do qualifying as
that's
well.
Right.
And so far, that's it. I don't think the lights races are on there. It always comes down to budget to some extent, too. Somebody's got to pay for some different things, and they have to make the logistics work out, but you never know. In the meantime, the great thing about today's modern technology is any radio station in any city can be listened to anywhere in the world through the internet and through podcasts and things along with that. So in reality, we have the same reach as we would on XM.
Right.
And, I don't know that XM would put together a full free podcast where they cut out the commercials and make that available.
Well, that's part of the challenges that go into this.
Yeah.
What we're really looking at is building a program leading into a race.
Davis Racing 322 asks, I'd like to know more about what it takes to make a street course from when the city closes the streets to when the city opens the street. Well, it takes a lot of work. That's the main thing. You know, I'm not in the logistical process that gets involved with those kind of things, but it's a major undertaking involved in that. So, you know, maybe that's something to get into with someone. It's probably more of a television thing. You know, you're going to need some visuals to kind of see and really get an idea of all that's involved. But safe to say, it's a week of thrashing, and it's a month of preparation. You know, at a place like St. Pete and Long Beach, they start putting in the barriers in where they can a month out and keep the streets open as long as they can. And they'll keep the streets open until, you know, the night before the event. Then they'll thrash and work all night to get everything ready as they go. And then right after the race, they're pounding to get everything back in as soon as they can. And they've got deadlines with the city as well. By the way, I wanted to mention this, too. I mentioned this when I was talking with JMV last week, but I forgot to mention tonight. So even if you can't come out tonight and join us at Fast Times, if you come out here anytime through next Sunday, in the next week, then if you rent one of their balaclavas, the headsock, that's, I think, $2. And that $2, so basically $2 of every race, unless you're bringing your own helmet, is going to go directly to the Caroline Sims Cancer Endowment. So we thank Fast Times for making that investment of just continuing what we're raising here tonight, with everything tonight going towards that, and then $2 of all the rides throughout the next week. So even if you can't be here tonight, if you're thinking about coming sometime in the near future, come by Sunday and make sure you get one of the balaclavas as well, and that will be of great interest to everyone involved. All right, we're going to chat with some more people that are here. Don't forget to call David if you'd like to bid on our IMS May experience at 317-239-1070. It's Trackside from the Fast Times Indoor Karting on the north side, 93.5, 107.5, and 1070 The Fan.
I'm Tony Kanaan, and this is Trackside with Kurt Covin and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
We're at the Kevin Lee Grand Prix at Fast Times Indoor Karting. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt just keeps answering his phone and getting up and walking away, so there better be breaking IndyCar news that he's going to tell us in a few minutes. But I found replacements, and I found my co-workers from NBCSN's IndyCar coverage. Taylor Rollins is here.
Hello.
He is one of our associate producers. All of the cool features, or many, I should say, of the cool features, and I've mentioned his name before, that you see in pre-race and during the race, are put together by Taylor and the people Taylor. So we're going to talk about that process.
Also, the pit producer.
And he is the pit producer now for the
qualifying producer. Yes.
Yes.
I'll get it right.
Now, our big boss is here. I have a lot of big bosses, though. There's Sam Flood, who's the executive producer of NBC. There's Rich O'Connor, who's the coordinating producer, who is always on site and produces our pre-races. And most of you are familiar with Terry Lingner, an Indianapolis native. And he is joining us here tonight. And Terry is a racer himself, a former driver at Le Mans and the Rolex
sort
24. No, we're going to remember when... David Donahue was in studio once, and he was your teammate.
Yep.
And he said, Terry can do it. Terry can get it done.
That was nice of him.
Better than your average gentleman driver.
Well, good.
And you didn't even have to write a big check, did you?
That's right.
So that's even better.
I've already wrote one here, though. I found a really nice photograph. I'm glad. This is a nice event.
Good. Thanks for coming out.
I'm in.
And Katie Hargett is here, one of my cohorts on pit road.
Hey,
for IndyCar. And her second, and we made jokes the last time she was on the show, that she was nervous and it was the highlight of her career.
And people thought I was serious.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
not that you weren't excited to be on.
It's
but
an honor to be on with
you. Yeah, it's not really the pinnacle because, one, it doesn't pay. So that's always kind of
prerequisite.
I've just
been waiting for the invite for so long.
Well, thank you all for coming out. And Katie is not willing to go out and get in the kart, even though she's a former racer. But she's got to go do the lottery show tonight, right?
Well, I retired a long time ago for a reason from driving. I stay on the other side of pit wall now for everyone else's safety and mine. But, yes, I also work for the Hoosier Lottery, so I'm going to go do that tonight after having some fun here.
When will that air?
It's just a quick little thing before the 11 o'clock news.
Okay.
So paid by the minute?
Technically, yes. Actually, she is. And Taylor has already been in on track. How did it go? You were in the race with all the pros.
Yeah, and so I finished glorious last, 24 seconds even. So I kept feeling the nudges, and yep, go by.
Oh, what?
It's the Sullivan's is what got me, you know, the Sullivan food. It was excellent.
I saw Kyle Kaiser giving everybody the side horn and the chrome horn.
Yeah, I did that on the outlap.
He was pushing and shoving his way through, and young Tony Donahue from 1070 The Fan was out there, and yep. Tony is... weighs about 140 pounds, so, and he's 25 years old, so he's got a little advantage.
You just couldn't get a clear track. It's okay. Yeah.
Now, are you going out, Terry? You came out and raced with me in Jackson.
I'm still sore. I got tennis elbow from the last time I was here. So I still want to be able to raise or tip my glass. So I got
understand. Yeah. You got to have your priorities.
Exactly.
So when we see one of those pieces that are, you know, 60 seconds long, and I don't think anybody really thinks about that. It's all, you know, somebody put that together. How long does that take to do those things?
Boy, it really varies. You know, when I did the feature on James's accident recovery that aired last year for our first race in Phoenix, I spent probably a total week working on that. If you were to put all the days going out doing a shoot and then just the time to put it all together, it can take about a week sometimes to... Maybe I can knock one out in the day if it's something short that, you know, we shoot on site. We can turn around some access pieces pretty quickly. But there's other long form that can take a long time to do.
Now, the other thing that's fascinating is during the race itself, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm never in the truck, but you're one of the people that put together the little race highlight package that you might see rolled in mid-race or if we have a longer post-race.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those that most of us just think, well, sure, that's there. We've got the highlights, but... There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, I have a group of 6 to 8 great guys that are all watching a couple cameras in our production trucks. There's the onboards, which is separate from the hard cameras around the track. But, you know, they're all working and clipping and sending us stuff, and then I'm following the race and working alongside one of the other EVS ops, and we're just building stories. If it seems like kind of Ray's going away with something, okay, maybe we dig up a flashback and marry it to something that's happening in the race. But if not, we're trying to just anticipate what we're going to need later on in the show. And so I have a bank of 6 60-inch TVs in front of me that have every camera around the track and every output of my guys, and we're just looking and building as we go along. It's it never stops. It's always... flat out, for sure.
And I miss doing qualifying wall-to-wall for the Saturday and Sunday, doing seven-hour shows, and poor Taylor and a couple of other people. Tell us what that weekend is like with NBCSN or versus when we were doing every moment of qualifying, and you would know on Sunday that you might only have 6 cars out on track trying to qualify.
Yep.
So we got to put some stuff together.
Yeah, we were always emptying the bucket for sure. But, you know, going into that week, you know, Monday we start building pieces just depending on what's going on, some of the different stories that we could tell. And I miss doing those shows where we could have that extra time to kind of tee up some of the backstories of drivers and special things that they were doing. But, yeah, once we got into a qualifying weekend, I remember I'd be at the track probably 7 a.m. Saturday morning, and I wouldn't leave until 7 p.m. Sunday night. We'd stay the whole night through.
Stayed overnight.
Yep.
Because you're doing a package that's recapping everything that happened Saturday that condenses everything into 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, we would build a couple packages. We'd have maybe one that would follow a driver during that day, and we would cut that down. And then there was also kind of the sat full recap, we call it, where we're taking the different sound bites from Radio Network, from NBC, and cutting it together to music to make a beautiful highlight to kind of kick off the broadcast the next day. So we could knock out one of those in about 8 hours overnight, maybe 9, depending on how we're going. But it's always fun, that's for sure. I can never complain.
Taylor, by the way, his grandfather drove in the Indianapolis 500 many times.
Gene Hartley, he was a former USAC champion, won the very first USAC race ever at the Fort Wayne Coliseum back in 56, I believe, 55, 56?
Probably 56.
Kevin was
formed
there.
After 55.
Yeah, Kevin was there.
Jerry Baker called it.
But, I grew up around the Speedway, meeting all the old guys like Johnny Boyd and
Just hanging out growing up, you kind of think now like how cool it was to meet a lot of those. But when you're a kid, you don't really think about that or know that. But, yeah, grew up around racing from Indy, and I've been hooked since day one.
That's Taylor Rollins, one of the producers at NBCSN. Terry Lingner is here, our lead producer, and Katie Hargett as well. All right, let's go around. Terry and Katie, jump in here. Let's just talk about the weekend that we just saw. What did we think of Long Beach?
I think it was a great race. We were just talking about this earlier between Taylor, Terry, and I. Just how we have two of the smaller teams winning the first two races. I think we're shaping up to have a really competitive season.
Yeah, Terry? I think I couldn't agree more. It's exciting to me to think that this parity is going to be a lot of fun to cover. I was really glad to see Hinchcliffe win too. That's such a cool story. And I really didn't think too much about it until I was driving over here. I wasn't able to hear or I was listening while I was driving over to the go-karting place here. That what Kurt was saying about Hinch winning early, and then Taylor quickly pointed out he almost won in Texas last year by a nose.
Heartbreaker.
So that was a real heartbreaker for him for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I think I was thinking about what you were talking about as well. The 85 laps, I think we all thought was going to be not so good, but it ended up being pretty good.
Ended up being about right, I think.
Yeah, really.
I mean,
did.
We had three cautions, and those that did two stops still were saving. So if somehow it had stayed green, I'm not sure that they make it.
Yep. That's such a cool setting. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh Lord, it's. I mean, Roger Vincent, our director, does such a great job, and just the atmosphere is it's almost like we just need to get out of the way. But again, I was telling Katie too, I was really happy with you guys in the pits that we got a lot of interviews on the air. Even my big critic at home, Louise, she always like, hey, I really like you. I like you guys interviewing people because I'm fans of theirs now. She loves Dale Coyne now.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's just, that's another reason.
And I gave Dale some grief afterwards because I always try to look at the people in my section and I want to let people know who really has a chance. Sometimes you're in third place, but you're going to pit in four laps and you're going to be back in 16th. But, we established early on that he fell to the back.
Sure.
And then we established, all right, he's back in sixth now and is back on strategy or fifth or whatever. And I'm looking at it, and I said to myself, I think he's going to finish in the top five.
Yeah.
So I go put Dale on, and I talk to him afterwards because he said, oh, no, we got no chance. And maybe we can be in the top 10. So I asked him afterwards. I said, I told you were a top five car.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, but always under promise and over deliver. Yep. And, they finished second because of circumstances. And I think, Katie, you had the challenge
the
of talking to Michael Andretti a few times.
I think I'm cursed, Kev, because nearly every race, I get all the guys that fall out early. This week I had Charlie Kimball, who, of course, was involved in the first lap accident. I had Alexander Rossi, who was cursed with whatever Andretti had going on this weekend.
He was going great, though.
He was, wasn't he impressive? So I talked to him early on this weekend about his performance on the road and street courses. We expected him to, he was coming from F1, he was coming from a Europe atmosphere. We expected him to really excel on the road and street courses last year, where we know Andretti Autosport just struggled as a team. So I talked about it during the race. They added a lot of engineering power. They added Jeremy Millis and Eric Bretzman
from Ganassi.
From Ganassi, and of course Jeremy was on Joseph Newgarden's car the last few years and really brought a lot of new, fresh ideas. He had to do a lot with a little at Ed Carpenter Racing, and Alex thinks that that's why they're so successful this year, because now he has all this engineering power and all these resources at his fingertips that he has completely changed their street course setup and their mechanical grip on the street courses, and they did a great job all weekend until all of them retired. And Hunter Ray, I'm glad Marty did that interview post-race, because I wasn't ready for that. I was heartbroken, too. I thought I was going to victory lane.
So for those that maybe didn't do all the reading afterwards, and it was different for each of them, here's what I understand. Rossi's engine blew. I think Sato's engine blew. Hunter Ray was an electrical problem.
It was the same thing that happened in Pocono to him last year.
And as he mentioned, the car started back up again. And it might or might not have been what happened to Marco, but Marco's was not an engine.
Correct.
What I was told, it was a sensor problem, which is an electrical type of problem as well. And I think his started again later. And they were simply waiting for a restart. They needed a caution, but safety would not restart him under green, so they needed a caution there. And as far as the engines blowing, I have no idea this is accurate or not, but one thing I wonder about is one of the big changes we've seen this year is Honda has caught up. In a year when there was supposedly no new development, they couldn't change the aero kits, they can make some minor changes to what they're doing with the engines, with components and things, but not that much. So how have they not only caught up but surpassed Chevy? One theory floating around here is that, well, they've just turned it up. And then when you do that, you're taking a chance that you might blow the thing back like they used to do in the day. So that may or may not be correct, but that's one of the possibilities.
You know, James Hinchcliffe had an issue, and this is a replay we didn't get on just because of time constraints, but he lost his left mirror. And so our camera, the point of view that shoots back at the driver, you see this little speck just go flying off, and it's like, oh, lost his mirror, but still found.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
So we definitely pointed it out. They saw it. They saw
it live.
Yeah, we did see it fly off. Yeah.
Wow. And then the thing with Bourdais, we didn't know what happened. Dale Coyne didn't know why they had to change the rear wing, but then he told us afterwards that a piece of debris came by and. Enough to, I don't know if you can actually duck in the cockpit or not, but I'm sure you're thinking about trying to do it, and it was big enough that it damaged the rear wing. That's scary. That is scary, scary stuff, and it is certainly a game of inches.
I also have to give some concern. I know everybody's really excited about next year, and the car looks, so far what we know is really, really good, really, really cool looking. But, we were in the thick of it, and even the chief spotter, John May, almost jumped out of his chair when Hildebrand, by the time I looked at that monitor, it just looked like Hildebrand went straight off and he just missed the corner. Yeah. Well, come to find out when we see the replay, he climbed the rear wheel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, that wheel guard helped that not go really ugly, in my opinion.
That's Long Beach's where Marco, that was kind of the first time we saw the first generation of this car when he got airborne, mm-hmm. going into 8 or 9, I think.
Yeah, that's
8. Off of the hotel, but
and that's been.
But you know
debated.
What I'm saying?
Yeah, that's been like, something that's debated whether that rear wheel guard helps.
I'd like
some
to
people
see the
think
study
it,
of that.
It helps launch it more. I know some of the people in IndyCar.
Well, I'm talking like I don't. Yeah, just but I, it's certainly worth considering or just talking about, which they do. I really am impressed with. With Rocket and Jay Fry and everybody that deals with the car, it is amazing how safe they've become. Really,
from a production standpoint, Terry, how do you go into a race? What's your goal as a producer for us to convey to the audience? Well, serving a couple of different roles, we're serving the audience, and we're also a partner to the series that we cover.
Well, you guys have heard me say it before, and it's almost become a cliche, but it's really our job to make people wish they were there. I mean, it's if in the shots that we take and the information that we give and the enthusiasm that we sell, there should be no better place on earth than to have been at Long Beach. That's really our job. I mean, we're journalists, but that's really it. And then past that, honestly, I've always felt like every guy out there is trying, and every teammate is trying just as hard as the other person. And the soft spot in me, and in my love for this sport, is that I want to make sure that a lot of people get on the air. That should be always a goal of ours. I always have a little checklist in front of me. Who have we gotten on? And I think that's pretty important.
All right, we all made picks before the season. I've already wanted to change mine. When I saw that Honda was ready to fight, I would have immediately, if I knew Honda was even or better, I'm taking Scott Dixon. Despite the fact that he could have won the first two races, he still finished third and fourth. So I still like my chances with Scott Dixon. I ultimately picked Simon Pagenaud. So, that's kind of covering all my bases. I got. But it was kind of an eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Which Penske will you take? But otherwise, Dixon is a pretty strong pick. I'll let you back around and choose two as well, Katie.
I did my eeny, meeny, miny, moe of Team Penske as well, but ended up with Joseph Newgarden.
Okay.
In my defense, I picked Scott Dixon for the 500.
I did as well. I did pick Dixon for the 500 because we think Honda, and even thought before, was going to be better. But I will not be surprised if Chevy comes up with something and all of a sudden, they have the advantage now. Who did you have, Terry?
Joe New. I thought Joseph would probably be, gosh, there's so many great drivers. I thought that combination and the fact that the two car was already established. And I think Joseph is smart enough, clearly as most of them are, but he's smart enough not to, if he's got a third place car.
Yeah.
He'll bring it home third, and that's how you win championships, I think.
I thought it might take him a year.
Yeah,
Mike,
could.
Who did you have for the championship? And you had to take your headsets off, Taylor.
Yeah,
I'm allowing you a second pick now that we know that a Honda is stout.
I did I did Pagenaud. I was hoping to see another champion back-to-back kind of year, but...
I picked him last year.
But my 500
Simon,
pick.
If you're listening, I picked you last year.
But here's what people don't know. You have an eerie sense of these things, Terry. You always pick the winner.
Yeah.
Always. Every time.
All right. Thanks for coming over, guys, and thanks for
coming
out.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this, too. It's an important cause, no doubt about it. We hate hearing or seeing sick kids.
Taylor Rollins, Terry Lingner, Katie Hargett from NBCSN. Kurt Cavan is here. I'm Kevin Lee. We are at Fast Times Indoor Karting for the Kevin Lee Grand Prix honoring Ben Burchard. Stay with us. It's 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
This is Trackside with Cavan and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us tonight from Fast Times Indoor Karting for the Kevin Lee Grand Prix honoring Ben Burchard and raising money for the Caroline Sims Cancer Endowment. We are so pleased for everyone that's come out tonight donating money for children's cancer research. Ben was a friend of my son's, the race quarter midgets, who picked out this particular charity and wanted to do what he could with the time he had left, and was a brave little boy, and certainly one that we want to continue to honor as long as we can and make sure that he has a legacy, and this event is one way that we can do that. Year number two, and we've had a great turnout here tonight. It's packed, and we are enjoying food from Sullivan Steakhouse. Maybe soon we'll also be enjoying the beverages from Redemption Aleworks. Some are already doing that. Crown Liquors, Man Cave Collectibles is providing some of the auction items. We've had some other things donated here as well tonight, and other good stuff.
It's been fun, and while you were on that last segment, I had a chance to watch some of the karting, and our good friend Matty Brabs is here, and this boy's got some explaining to do.
Well, I hear he took out his girlfriend.
No, that's not how it went.
No, or was it the other way around?
She gave
you the chrome horn.
Yeah. No, I think I've taught her well. She took me out a bunch of times, so she was happy about that, of course. But, she's a great racer. I mean, we've been coming out to Fast Times quite often, and she's been getting better and better, and I think her number one goal pretty much every time she goes out on track is to make sure she gives me a big wallop up the backside and tries to take me out. So.
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't that she just waited for him to come around and then gave him a punt. She ran side by side for about three or four laps before she got underneath and really gave
him the
shove.
So she's as fast as you now?
Oh, yeah. She's quick.
She's good, quick. Very quick.
We had a party out here for my birthday, and she beat a couple of the races, and that definitely put a sour look on their face. So I've been trying to teach her, and she's been doing an awesome job.
I've got the lap times here in front of me as of a few minutes ago. Let's see if you guys are on there. What kind of times were you running?
I think it was 22, high 22s, and then Kim was like a 23, low 23, 23 flat. So she was within a couple of tenths of my best time.
Oh, there you are, 22.7, and Kim is 23.3. 23.3 is good.
Yeah,
23.3.
I'm giving a standing ovation to Kim.
Yeah, very nice.
She destroyed him. That's what she said. I destroyed him.
Yeah.
So good to have Kim Bogle out here. And also Matt Brabham raced in the Indianapolis 500 last year. By the way, someone was asking. Let me find who tweeted. Wanted to know, Ryan, this is our dog. Who's the fastest so far? Well, it's IndyCar Stig. That's a given. He's better than all of the pros are because this is his home track. 22.581. And it gets a little quicker when you come out to an event like this. If you come out on your own on a Tuesday afternoon, there's not as much rubber on the track. It's not as warm. You're not going to be quite that quick. Knight Rider, who I'm told is also
a ringer
because he's worked here, 22.6. Frosty the Stig, or no, it's Frosty that worked here, 22.62. Then IndyCar Stig and another one. Then Luke Durrett, 22.7. Luke races with us out at Newcastle and raced quarter midgets with Jackson when he was a kid. And then Matt is the fastest of the pros.
Oh, my goodness.
Your next best. Then Knight Rider again. Then Vintage Roger. Then Brady Sappenfield. Then the next fastest of the pros is Kyle Kaiser. And then we see Nico Jamin, Juan Piedrahita, and on down the line. So it's been good stuff going
There's
so far.
There's some good guys here. This is tough. This is going to be competitive. Fast.
I'll go at 9 o'clock, right, when the show is done, so that way no one can report my time.
Oh, when the track's, like, super gripped
that
in
too.
As well.
That was part of my
gets cooler. Of my plan. That's kind of the happy hour, I guess, for the carters here. So.
Happy hour.
So did you win in the Super Trucks this
weekend?
Of course
you did.
Yes,
did.
Yes,
you
I
win
did.
Both?
I won the first and came second in the second race.
Okay.
And we do it's kind of like motocross where we do, it's kind of like a heat race, and then we add the total points of the weekend, and that's kind of the official result. So
you won the weekend.
I won the weekend, so that was pretty good for me, and I was very happy about that. So
this is your
cool.
second season doing that?
Yes, this is
was
my second.
Was last year a full season or just part-time?
Last year was a full season.
Okay.
I managed to piece all the races together with a couple of different sponsors, and then this year I've actually had a Safecraft come on board, so that was a last minute deal, but it was great to have those guys come on. And then I think I'll be in another truck next weekend or in a couple of weeks for Perth.
So this, I'm sure, was not the plan a few years ago, and you were just dominant coming up the ranks. I think most people know this, but we'll go ahead and mention it for those that are casual listeners here in Indianapolis. Matt Brabham is a third-generation racer. His grandfather is one of the legends. Jack Brabham was the first to have success racing a rear-engine car, the Cooper Climax in 61 in the Indianapolis 500. And did he win two world championships?
Three
world championships. And then your dad, Jeff Brabham, ran Indy cars for a long time. I'm going to say maybe 10 500s or so.
Yep.
Ran NASCAR. He was a sports car champion. So a fantastic driver in his own right. And then you coming up the ranks in Pro Mazda, what'd you win? Like a dozen races? 10? Something like that?
13 out of the 16.
13 out of 16. Not too shabby. Yeah. And you've won races in Indy Lights as well. And then, like so many, you run into the funding game. So,
Absolutely. Long,
winding question. You're a racing driver. You accept the opportunity is there. Mm-hmm. What do you make of Super Trucks, and would you ever guess this 3 years ago? This is what you'd be doing.
No, I didn't think so. You know, obviously, my ideal career path was to go through the Mazda Road to Indy, win the championships, and make it IndyCar. So that was my kind of beeline and my path that I was willing to take. And as you know, as many drivers are in the same boat as me, you know, there's only a few spots available in IndyCar. And it's tough to get in those ones because it's so competitive. So you have to do everything you can on the racetrack and off the racetrack. So, you know, that's the biggest thing for me is I've been trying to learn the business side of racing. A lot like there's a lot of guys in IndyCar that are very good at that. And they get to keep rotating in those seats every year. So that's what I'm trying to do at the moment is really focus on learning that side. And, the Super Truck thing really just was a random thing that I was in Toronto and I saw the trucks racing and I thought that is the coolest thing I've ever seen and I definitely want to at least try it. And I walked over to Robbie in the paddock and was
Robbie
talking
Gordon.
With him. Yeah, and luckily that weekend there was...
They probably put you in a car 15 minutes later, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. So, I think Paul Tracy wasn't able to make the race.
Gee, what a surprise.
So he didn't show up and I managed to get his truck for the weekend. So I literally raced back to the hotel in Toronto through all the traffic. Got my race suit and helmet and came back 5 minutes before the session started, and that was it from there.
If you ever want to race in the Super Trucks, it seems like Toronto is the place where you might just want to be on standby. A few years ago, Townsend Bell was talked into it, while he was there, and he's wearing my shoes. He's wearing somebody else's Hans device, borrowed a helmet, yep, and a race suit. So that seems to happen. And you've been good at it so far. What's the transition like to do that?
It's pretty different. It's kind of a mixture of drivers. A lot of them come from off-road, and that's where all the jumps come into. And the truck's got like nearly 32 inches of suspension travel. So you go from, you know, minimal movement of a road car an open wheel car, and you jump in that thing and you brake, and it feels like your head's gone in the ground. And then when you accelerate, it feels like you're looking at the sky. So it just takes used to a little bit of time to get used to the suspension. And then obviously the jumps are quite new to me. And then once I got that, it was fine. But I mean, the super trucks has just been wonderful for me. And getting me to the racetracks, Robbie's really looked after me well, and it's helped me pay the bills for the groceries and keep my life rolling and keeping me active. So I've been very grateful for that, and it's been perfect for me over the last couple of years and what I've been trying to do. Obviously, my number one goal is to get back at the Indy 500 and have a shot at winning it. And then the Super Trucks has also been good as a thing to keep me going and keep a living going and keep me in motor racing. So I've loved it.
Well, it's not surprising, but I find it interesting is, of all the people out there that they talk about who could be in a seat, and I'm talking about the team owners and the people in the know, this is who they talk about the most. It really is somebody who really should be in an Indy car, and just for a variety of circumstances, number of seats being one of them, it's been a challenge, and I'm sure it has to be frustrating, but can you take some consolation in knowing that people believe you should be there?
Yeah, it's great to hear, obviously. I don't really try and focus too much on that. I'm just trying to work my butt off and get in a car. So, no, it's always refreshing to hear that. But it takes a lot of hard work, and, you just have to keep pushing every day and working harder than the guys around you. So that's my focus, and hopefully it pays off. And hopefully, some of the team owners seen or take notice of what I'm trying to do and off the track and on the track and give me a shot. So.
Well, you had a really good month of May last year, didn't you? Do you feel like that was a success?
I think it was a success. I think we had a great car on the road course race, and we had awesome speed there at the Indy Grand Prix. I qualified, 13th. I only just missed out on the top six in the first group. And we had a lot of issues with red tires and trying to run two sets, because I'd never run red tires in my life before. Never get to test on those things. And that was my first qualifying session, and our plan was obviously to run two sets right off the bat so I could get used to it, and we never got the chance to run the second set due to a fuel problem getting our fuel in. So I only ran one set. I qualified 13th, so I was super proud of that. And then in the race, we came out on both stops due to the same fuel issue at the back of the pack under yellow. So I managed to come back through to 16th, and then the whole month of May with the Indy 500 stuff was good. I mean, we kept it clean. It was my first time. It's quite daunting, and that was kind of, there was some signs of great speed, and, I had some good moments in the race where I was competitive and battling with guys like Helio, and then we went for the Rossi strategy and pitted, unfortunately, with only like two laps to go, so we ended up dropping back to 22nd, but overall, I was really happy with it. I think it gave me confidence that, I deserve to be there, because, I kind of, you always question yourself as a driver when you want to step up on the big stage, like, are you really going to be on par with these guys? And that was kind of the big okay for me. I mean, I felt like I jumped in straight away and was able to compete. And, I was quite fresh to it all. So I think once I get a couple of races under my belt, they don't see any reason why I can't run up front and compete with those guys for race wins.
I think you kind of came from the back like twice, didn't you? Didn't you get shuffled to the back?
Yeah, a bunch of times. So
yeah,
I nearly got lapped on one of the pit cycles. So I there was an up and down race for me for sure, and I was down the back, then I came up through to 14th and then the top 10 and back again. So it was just that's just the 500 though for you, so you never know what's going to happen.
Well, when you're a rookie and you bring the car home, that's a major accomplishment, because the percentages are, I don't know if it's 50-50 or what, but it's pretty high.
I think you can just go by what my dad says, and there's two types of race car drivers in Indy. Ones that are going to hit the wall and ones that have already hit the wall. So, I was pretty happy to get through my first month without any incidents whatsoever. So, and the road course race as well. I think the only thing we had was a loose wheel nut come off and a brake line that got pinched. And that was at the road course race due to mechanical things. So,
do you have any prospects for Indy this year?
Yes. I mean, we're working on it really hard. And I think every announcement that's come out over the last couple of months, I've always been right there in the line talking with those teams, and it's nearly come off, you know, on numerous occasions. So, you know, I'm very positive. You know, as Kurt said, I think the teams are talking about me, and they're aware of me, and they know I can do a good job and bring the car home. So it's just a matter of pulling those opportunities together. And I think our biggest obstacle at the moment is of course, time, because it's not far away. So I'll be doing everything I can. I mean, I got lots of guys helping me out on the corporate side, the business side, the sponsorship side. And obviously, I'm kind of going around and talking to all the team owners myself. So just trying to make it happen, really. But we're positive. There's not much time left. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, I want to be in the race. And, you know, I think there's a couple of cars left that have yet to be announced. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I'm a part of it. But we'll see.
Still, what, 22, 23?
23, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we hope you're there this May.
Thank you.
But if not, there's still a lot to go.
Yeah.
You know, and as you said, fantastic that you're paying the bills right now, because a lot of guys don't have that opportunity.
No, yeah. There's a lot of
struggling.
There's a lot of broke race car drivers out there, and most of the time they just have to, you know, live off their parents. And that's one thing that, you know, I don't think too many people realize when they hear the Brabham name. But when my dad raced, he didn't have much help at all from my grandfather. And my dad went around Europe living out of a van with my mom, and they went broke. My dad ran his own F3 program all across Europe by himself. And when he used to start the car, he'd have to wait for someone to walk by to pull out the battery for him.
Wow.
So he can go on his way. And dad's kind of obviously helped me out as much as he can. But at the same time, you know, everyone in our family understands racing.
Yep.
And if you get the easy ride and the free ticket all the way up, there's no way that you're ever going to be a champion, and you're not going to be like the guys that have had to work their ass off to get there. So there's a lot of people that I idolize, you know, Scott Dixon, Will Power, and all the guys that are true IndyCar champions, and the guys that are legends in racing are the ones that have always had to work hard to get there. So, you know, I think that's, I'm kind of, you know, obviously would have liked to have had the easy way up, but dad's been, you know, pretty hard on making me do things on my own and getting there myself. So I think it's made me more hungry, and every day I'm not in a car, I'm growing more hungry. So, you know, hopefully it's going to lead to the positive outcome.
Thanks for coming out. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Matty Brabham. Cheers. Look forward to seeing him in an IndyCar again in the very, very near future. In the meantime, he's tearing it up in Robbie Gordon's Stadium Superstructs.
That's right. He looked really good.
More to come from Fast Times Indoor Karting, our final segment coming up. Trackside, 107.5, 1070, The Fan.
I'm Ryan Unaray, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight. If you're listening on the radio or after the fact on the podcast via iTunes or all the other formats, it's still available on Android devices. You can go to my Twitter and just, this is a week or so old, so you have to scan back a little bit at KevinLee23, and several have offered the ways to download the podcast, and I retweeted those. Before I forget, next week's show is to be determined, and it will depend on what happens tomorrow night with the Pacers. Chris Denary is one of our guests, and did he explain the
no,
if,
we didn't
if they
get
win,
into
they're
that.
In. If they lose, they need some help, and they get in, is it. So we'll know more this weekend, so just check the Twitter page or check when the Pacers are playing. And if they're playing on Tuesday, we will not be on next Tuesday. So we'll be on either Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, something like that next week. Probably not Thursday, though, because we'll be traveling on Thursday.
Going I go Friday Barber. Morning.
You're going Friday morning?
So I'm
gonna
I could do Thursday night.
I'm going to go ahead and do Thursday. Well, then we'll just put you in charge of the show if we need to do on Thursday night. And
you've
I,
carried
I said
us
when,
before.
When you kept leaving, I assume you got breaking IndyCar news for it because you kept answering your phone.
Well, when the bosses call,
see?
I answer it.
Yeah?
So
nothing breaking for us?
No, not really.
Okay.
I had questions for Jay today, and we answered those, and that was the second one. I remember who the first one was. So.
One thing I want to mention is that IndyCar drivers are testing at Texas, and that's one of the reasons we didn't have IndyCar drivers out here tonight. Last year we had Hinch and Joseph and Connor and Pippa and so many others. I know Pippa was working at Barber today, and all the full-time drivers are testing at Texas Motor Speedway tomorrow, and I saw it's open to the public for free.
I'll be down there first thing in the morning, so Should be good. Of course, they have a new reconfiguration of the, let's see, that's the south end of the racetrack, turns 1 and 2. It was on display over the weekend with the NASCAR race, which I've not had a chance to watch yet. Jimmy Johnson won that race, and so they have new paving, a new configuration. It's a little wider through that section of the racetrack, so we'll see how it fits for IndyCar.
We talked a little bit with the guys from NBC. They kept teasing we were going to talk about Andretti's woes and have been visiting with some of the different drivers that were here. You know, while it didn't go well and they have not had the results they want, Andretti is showing that they're back in the game now.
Oh, sure. The Honda's across the board, but the Andretti's on the street circuits for sure. And, you know, we go to Barber next. We'll have to see how that translates. But, you know, it's fun when it seems everyone has a chance. And,
yep.
And I think it's fair to say that everybody has shown real flashes so far this season.
Dale Coyne Racing essentially leads the Constructors' Championship. Their drivers have finished 1st, 2nd, 6th, and 10th.
That's correct.
Let's add them all up.
Not bad.
Nobody's better than that so far.
No one's better. And as you point out, it's not just Sebastian Bourdais, whom you'd expect would fare pretty well. Ed Jones has been terrific as a rookie, brought the car home both races, and actually has made fewer mistakes than Bourdais. Bourdais made one in the qualifying session at St. Peter. He wouldn't have started in the back. But Ed Jones has been picture perfect pretty much.
What was it? I saw Arnie from IndyCar tweet something that this is the best start for a rookie since Nigel Mansell.
Yeah, we went looking through the record books trying to find a comparable. You had to give it to Nigel Mansell. The other one who officially was a rookie that year did really well was Ryan Hunter-Reay, but he had been in Champ Car, so I put the kibosh on using Ryan Hunter-Reay as a rookie in the IndyCar series,
yeah.
But which I never agreed with at the time, by the way. But, since Nigel Mansell, and that's pretty good company.
Twitter question from Stephen V. King. Did they make it to 33 entrants for the 500 by the deadline?
The deadline was yesterday, but that's for receiving the entries. There's a process that happens on what I call the other side of the street, and so they'll be announced here in a day or two. It's just a matter of getting everybody lined up.
We've only got about a minute or so left, but I wanted to have on and have an opportunity to introduce you to one of the young drivers that was kind enough to come out tonight. It's Kyle Kaiser from Juncos Racing, a race winner in Indy Lights, and you guys were really getting after it on the kart track there.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I mean, Nico wanted to battle with me. I was trying to get a good time in, so I spent like the first middle half of the session just going back and forth with him. It was a good time.
Push this a little closer to you here. So
I thought it was good.
It's close enough, but I'm a perfectionist.
He's trying to make him a pro.
I'm engineering things, so I'm in charge of that. We don't have a lot of time, but I'll just get right to the question people are asking about. When Ricardo formed the IndyCar team, there were a lot of rumors out there that you might do the 500 as soon as this year. Where do things stand on that? What can you tell us?
The time's cutting close. I've been trying to get a sponsor. I mean, I've been working on it. I've seen the rumors, too. People are saying I already got the seat, and I'm like, that'd be great if I did. But that's not the truth right now. I'm still working. I need a little bit more money to get the seats. Both the seats are open. And if there is an announcement, it'll be made. But as of right now, I can't give you anything.
You feel like if the budget comes through that you're ready to do this?
I think absolutely I'm ready to do the race, but I'm still very young. I just turned 21 this year.
Yeah.
I'm still not rushing getting into that race. As much as I'd love to do it, I'm not in a rush to do it. So I'd love to do it this year or next year, but if it isn't right for this year, I'll gladly do it next year.
So what do you think of the challenge that's ahead of you this year as a veteran coming back that has won races, that fought for the championship last year? You know, we were talking with Juan Pedro Hita about this. With Dalton. I asked him this question. You know, you assume you're going to really move up, but then all these new guys come in that are super fast. How challenging is this Indy Lights championship?
It's always been competitive. So no matter who's coming in, new guys, old guys, you know it's going to be competitive. And I know, like, coming in as your third year in the series, you're like, man, I got to win the championship this year. That's not really my approach. Is I got to win it. I know I have the experience. I know I'm capable of winning races in the series. So I'm going to go out each weekend, bring what I have to the table, and hopefully we have the good car. And I trust Juncos for giving me a good car every weekend, and we'll try to win. And I know there's a lot of luck involved in racing, so you just try to win as much as you can and hope it goes your way.
You ran with Juncos back in Pro Mazda too, correct?
I did, yeah.
So you've been with them for a little while. You've seen this program, not from the beginning, but you've seen it from several years grow to now they can enter a car or two in the Indianapolis 500. What do you make of what Ricardo has been able to do in really short time?
It doesn't surprise me, to be honest. Just seeing Ricardo's passion and ambition in the sport, he's always striving to step to the next level. So it doesn't surprise me to see him do it, but I'm very excited and happy for him to have this opportunity.
Are you still taking some classes in school?
I am, yeah. I just go part-time at Santa Clara University. I've been doing just one quarter every year. So I go there, and then they say, okay, I can take as much as 5 years off after every quarter I do. So okay. They've been really lenient.
That's good.
Yeah.
And you played football in high school, right?
I did,
so
yeah.
There aren't a lot of guys, you know, like Sage Karam, and there are a few others. How challenging was that to try to race doing go-karts and starting in formula cars and play another sport?
It was really tough. I mean, it came down to the point where I had to make a decision. It was my junior year. I made the varsity team, and there was just too many conflicts with the race series. That was my first year in Pro Mazda. I had to make the decision whether I was going to do varsity football or do Pro Mazda, and I made the decision. I said, I want to race cars, so yeah. I can't give – I don't think I'm going to play college football. So I had to make the decision right there. I said – I told the coach. I explained it to him. He understood. So then I just – from there on, I've been full bore. Racing is pretty much my only sport.
Hey, thanks so much for coming out tonight.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a great event. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Kyle Kaiser won a couple of times last year, finished third in the Indy Lights Championship, drives with Juncos Racing, and look for him coming up at Barber next weekend as well. So we've had Kyle here. We've had Nico Jamin. We've had Juan Piedrahita, Dalton Kellett, Matt Brabham. I know I'm going to forget some people that have been out here tonight. All my cohorts from NBCSN.
Chris Denary.
We're here. Chris Denary, the television voice of the Pacers, was
the radio
here tonight.
Radio 24 of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
That's
radio
right.
Network.
That's right. And many thanks also to Laura Steele, the goddess of rock, who is handling the auction here for us tonight. Thanks to everyone at Fast Times for helping us and donate to the cause and donating their time and their product, basically, is what they've done for us to raise money for the Caroline Sims Foundation. Caroline, a little girl that succumbed to cancer several years ago. Her parents have been involved in this and heading up this charity. Dave and Elizabeth are here. We thank them. We thank Ron and Tammy Burchard as well, Ben Burchard's parents. And Ben is the name that I've attached to this as well, who was the one that tipped me off to this fantastic group that is trying to raise money to make sure the next little kid doesn't have to deal with this or can win the fight against childhood cancer. Kurt, thank you so much. You're going to be heading up some of the swag that we get for our auction winner, and we'll tour them around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and have them come in for an evening of Trackside in the near future as well. Thanks to David Deering back in the studio, who put the podcast up in a few minutes. We'll find out, pending Pacers playoffs, when we're on next week. And otherwise, we'll talk to you then and get set for the Barber race. And a lot of the tweets I didn't get to tonight, a little bit off schedule. We'll get to those coming up next week. Thank you so much for joining us from Fast Times Indoor Karting on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.